I very much liked the approach of focusing on the credibility problem. And I think it's been interesting that the new post-Mubarak governments in Egypt have all talked about reforming subsidies gradually, particularly starting with gradual reform of the fuel subsidy system. But action has been much more limited. And I remember well, in September 2011, we brought one of the ministers from the then Egyptian government to London for a conference with people from the IMF and so on about future economic policy. And one of the arguments was made at that time was, well, of course, we will be able to press ahead with these reforms far more successfully than the previous government, because we are a revolutionary government, we're elected, and we're going to have that all-important credibility with the people. Sadly now, of course, that sounds extremely optimistic. I think the absence of trust is a very pronounced feature of the Egyptian political system. And I think even when the Muslim Brotherhood is sharing power and appointing people that aren't from Brotherhood backgrounds to key economic posts, as it has done, that's not necessarily enough. I recently also spoke to one supporter of Baradei about prospects for power sharing, and their point of view was, well, we don't trust power sharing if it's just a temporary attempt to share power with us so as to blame us for the IMF loan. So those are some kind of pessimistic initial thoughts, I think. It's also worth noting that the severe absence of trust doesn't only relate to local elites, it also relates to foreign advice. And that's something all of us that work for international NGOs or think tanks or so on need to bear in mind when working in and writing about Egypt. And that's something that certainly has a major bearing on institutions like the IMF. There certainly has been a kind of bizarre coalition of opposition to the IMF loan, which has come both from the military and from young revolutionaries who on almost everything else are strongly opposed to the military. But where the military have been concerned about reforms impinging on their privileges and have also had a traditional anxiety about the impact of foreign debt on sovereignty, let's note that Egypt's government very rarely borrows overseas. For the leftist revolutionaries, taking an IMF package has been seen as something with symbolic value. And some of them would cast it from their point of view as, if the Muslim Brotherhood agrees this package with the IMF, this will be the kind of final seal of approval from the West. It will show that they are basically selling out the revolution to be part of the Western vision for the region, just as has happened with brokering the ceasefire in Gaza. So that's a narrative. It might seem strange to some of the people in the room, but that's an important narrative that's out there. And in a way, this war of narratives has played out in the debate over the IMF and over economic reforms much more than the actual details of what the reforms would entail or what they would mean for people. Especially with the initial IMF loan that was proposed in 2011, the levels of public awareness of what the loan actually offered and what it required in terms of conditionality were very, very low. And a lot of the opposition was more to a nebulous sense of the organisation having a history that was negative, and also related to public suspicion of an institution that was seen by many as having praised the reforms of the previous government. There is an uncertainty over Egypt's future economic model. It's very clear that the uprising expressed a dissatisfaction with crony capitalism, but since then people have been very divided over whether they want to go for a real liberalisation. For instance, writers like Tariq Osman would argue that the liberalisation had created a middle class that now wants to push for a real liberalisation and a level playing field. At the same time, there are others that would argue it was a revolution against neoliberalism and that what Egypt needs is a state that takes on more responsibility for social justice. And so the narratives about subsidies all need to be seen in that sort of broader context. Just a few last thoughts on on the specific implications for subsidy policy. Remember, Egypt currently doesn't have a parliament, so there is a real problem when it comes to legitimising controversial economic policy choices, and foreign stamps of approval may not help there, they may backfire. Number two, probably makes sense, as the government has suggested already, to start with fuel. Gallup have just done a poll in various Middle Eastern countries, including Egypt, where they ask people if they had to choose where they'd like to see subsidies reduced first, and one in four Egyptians said fuel subsidies, which is very interesting. Thirdly, as was touched on, the fear of corruption is a key problem here, so there would need to be very serious thought given to how to make the cash transfer system as transparent as possible. And fourthly, one of the big economic problems Egypt has been facing for years is persistently high inflation. The cost of living has been rising consistently, even during 2009, when inflation was very low globally. And there is a risk, I think, with the Big Bang approach, if food prices rise and there's more cash in the system all at once, that you could see inflationary pressures coming in. And so some considerable thought would need to be given to how to mitigate those. Thank you very much, though. I think it's a valuable contribution, and look forward to discussing more with all of you afterwards. Thank you.